Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Book Doctor by Brittany King, narrated by James Romick. 'Tis strange, but true, for truth is always strange, stranger than fiction, if it could be told. How much would novels gain by the exchange? How differently the world would men behold? How oft would vice and virtue places change? The new world would be nothing to the old. If some Columbus of the moral seas would show mankind their soul's antipodes. George Gordon Byron, Lord Byron, Don Juan, Canto the 14th, verse 101. Prologue. Now. For a long time the two of us were friends, long being a subjective term. Long being the amount of time it takes to write a novel, and in this case, long meaning far more time than any of the parties involved preferred. "When are you ever going to learn?" he asks, stepping in front of me. Looking me in the eye, he shakes his head. "When?" Believe me, I wish I had an answer. You can't see it, can you? It's an asinine question, considering my left eye is nearly swollen shut, and the right is filled with blood. I can't see anything. "Love is blind," he tells me, a sentiment that has everything and nothing to do with my current predicament, and feels like a very good metaphor for my life up to this point. "It's like the whole world, everyone," he says. "They all went mad." Eventually, he ceases pontificating. He pushes me back into the office chair, and I tell myself, "This is it." This is the point in which you suddenly realize the story shakes out much, much worse than you could have ever imagined. "You know," he says, slapping the back of my head, the force of which causes blood to spray from my lips, "it really can't get much worse." Surveying the blood that coats my desk, I beg to differ. He spins the chair around until I good and truly can't see anything. Then he smacks me with the barrel of the gun. The crack reverberates from ear to ear, bouncing around inside my skull like a snare drum. "Right." When I can manage, and not a moment sooner, I flex my fingers. Stretch and flex. Flex and stretch. It's a scene he is used to, which is maybe why he elbows me in the face. My mouth fills with blood. I spit a broken tooth onto the keyboard. "I told you I can't." "You are going to die," he tells me. "Either way, you are. How it happens is up to you." When he moves to strike again, I lean away. This time I hold my hands up and surrender. I relent. "Okay. Just give me a minute." I watch in relief as he shoves the gun in the waist of his tuxedo pants. He walks toward the door, and I think this is where it ends. But then, I know him better than that. With a smile, he lifts a plastic bag from the floor and raises it to eye level. "Do you know what this is?" "I'm a writer. I'm afraid I might." He pulls out a container of lighter fluid, and then another, and another, counting as he tosses the empty bottles onto the floor. When the bag is empty, he drops it and fetches a book of matches from his coat pocket. On the front, the name of the restaurant where we had our first meeting. "Don't worry," he says. "It'll go quick." My eyes dart toward the door. "Listen," as he watches me contemplate my next move. A grin spreads across his face. He knows I'm thinking about what's at stake if I don't make it out of this room alive. She will die. She will burn to death, and while he will have been the one to set the house ablaze, we both know this is a fire that started long before he struck the match. "You see, this is what happens when a person doesn't know their own limits." He's wrong. It's the dead of night, and even if I could manage the mile and a half it takes to reach the neighbors, it would be too late. "You can't save everyone," he says, confirming my suspicion. "That's the problem nowadays. Everybody wants to be the hero." He lifts me by the throat and drags me across the office. I could ask why he doesn't just put a bullet in my head and be done with it, but I don't have to. That would ruin the ending. It could have gone differently, you know. I hold my breath as I crane my neck. There's a car coming up the drive. Or at least I thought there was, until I discover that it's only wishful thinking. Hope will suffocate you if you let it. My eyes flit toward the gun. His attention is on the door. That's always been his weakness, his distractibility. He tears off a match and drags it along the rough edge of the matchbook. I know what you're thinking. What I'm thinking is, I've spent some time in burn units doing research. Even if I didn't love her, even if I could hate her for what she's done, I don't want her to die this way. The match ignites. At the halfway point, he leans forward and stubs it out on my hand. I move to block him, to go for the gun, and as I do, my hand grazes my face in the process. Bile rises in my throat. What was once my jawline is now just flesh hanging. It's okay, he says, shoving me toward the sofa. None of it will matter when you're dead. You don't. Now is not the time for bargaining. He strikes another match. Really, you should be thanking me. At least she won't have to see you like this. My brow furrows, giving me away. I don't mean for it to happen. My poker face has a habit of betraying me where she is concerned. Automatic response is inevitable, and if distraction is his weakness, she is mine. I'm half-seated, half-slumped on the couch when he pulls the gun from his waistband and aims it at my head. I thought you'd be more comfortable here. He motions toward the notepad beside me. Now write. You might as well just shoot me. Before the sound of the gun firing registers, I feel the white-hot searing pain. Before I feel the white-hot searing pain, I see bone fragments fly from my kneecap. The blood makes me realize I should have made an effort. Later, when I come to, I hear a mewling sound somewhere deep in the belly of the house. Maybe it's her. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm dead, and maybe this is hell. He's seated cross-legged on the floor in front of me, gripping the gun in one hand, picking pieces of bone out of the carpet with the other. The things you make me do. I watch as he spreads the pieces of my knee out in front of him and begins fitting them together like a jigsaw puzzle. Not bad, eh? He flashes a smile. What do you think? What I'm thinking is maybe it's impossible to survive a man like him. Now that you're awake, he says, it's time to finish the story. I don't. Remember? You promised. He's right. I did promise. That's how this started. Chapter 1. Then. Her skin is milky white, like freshly fallen snow. Her thighs are exposed. Her hair partially conceals her face. A thin dress barely covers her. One strap has fallen from her left shoulder. The other is torn. Except for the bruising, she's like a ghost, almost translucent. She is young. How young, I can't say. One thing is for sure. She does not look peaceful. She does not look like she is sleeping. Her eyes are wide open, glassy, transfixed, frightened. Her head is shadowed by a halo of matted blood in the same shade of burgundy as the curtains in my childhood home. Knocked off balance by the memory, I stumble forward, catching myself on the curb. I'm not a stranger to the sight of a corpse. I just wasn't expecting to see one here. Movement flashes in my peripheral vision. Glancing sideways, I see a uniformed officer taking long strides in my direction. In his left hand dangles crime scene tape. When he reaches me, he offers a curt nod. Can I help you? I realize he expects an answer, but all I can do is stare over his shoulder at the girl's face. Sir, he says, clearing his throat, you're going to have to move along. I start to speak, but can't get the words out. I swear her mouth twitches upward. I once read about body farms, where they study decomposition. So I know it's possible. Bodies keep moving for up to a year after death. I've seen time-lapse footage. It's really quite something. Swallowing hard, I nod toward the opposite end of the lot. I'm trying to get to the pharmacy. He raises his hand to his brow as though to shield his eyes from the sun. He looks animatedly in the direction of the pharmacy, and then back at me, stating the obvious with his body language. I'm afraid that ain't gonna happen anytime soon. Widening his stance, he partially blocks my view of the woman. When I strain and stretch upward, he follows my gaze until we're both looking at the body sprawled out on the pavement. A man stands over her, and a woman leans over his shoulder. He's taking photographs, and the female detective appears to be directing the shoot. "Wait a second," the officer says. "I know you. You're..." He takes a step back, reaching his free hand toward his jawline, and then leans forward. "You're George Dawson, author of..." "Yes," I say, cutting him off. "The average crime scene where murder is involved takes 4 to 10 hours to clear. I don't have time for this." He scratches his chin. "Author of those Croft books?" "No, that's Jake Patterson." "Ah, well, I saw the movie and..." "Murdered?" I ask. Nodding toward the body, his eyes follow mine. Eventually, he looks back at me with mild amusement. "It's an active investigation," he tells me. "Can't say." "Right." I turn on my heel to start to go, but my feet might as well be cemented to the asphalt. I contemplate making a run for it. At my age, I don't think I could outrun him. But maybe if I cut out a zigzag pattern, maybe I can outmaneuver him. Better not. What I don't need is to get arrested, or any other complications. As it is, if I don't cut out of the meeting early, there won't be enough time. Joni made it clear she can't stay. If she doesn't leave by 2:30 on the dot, she'll be late to pick up her daughter. She warned me. It can't happen again. The other thing that can't happen again is Eve going another night without her medication. It's entirely possible one of us might not survive. "Say," the officer smiles. He shoves a notebook at my chest. "Before you go, can I get your autograph?" He removes a pen from his pocket. "I wouldn't worry too much," he says, handing over the pen. "Probably just one less junkie on the street." I scribble out, "Jake Patterson," and head in the opposite direction. Chapter 2. The Book Doctor. Journal Entry. She didn't smell bad the way they sometimes do. The way her eyes glared into mine as I fucked her. I found that pleasing as well. Something to be said for, really. No one makes eye contact like that anymore. Her search was endless. Whatever she was looking for, answers, a home, love, all of the above, I wanted to make sure she found it. The lack of smell and absence of dirt under her fingernails told me she hadn't been on the streets long. That, or she wasn't as bad off as the rest of them. Roaches, scattering in the daylight. But at night, well, it's a different story. When night falls, they're everywhere. Which is why when I asked her where to go for a little privacy, she didn't bat an eye. "Around the corner," she pointed. "There's a parking lot." Turns out I should have done my goddamned homework. It wasn't just any parking lot. It was a fucking pharmacy. And do you know what pharmacies have? Cameras. "It's okay," she said. "I do it all the time." The way she spoke made her sound younger than she looked. It made me sure she was what I was looking for. A liar. It wasn't until after I paid her and rolled the condom on that she proved herself, saying, "I don't usually do this. It's actually my first time." Obviously, it wasn't true. Obviously, she was trying to add to some sort of fantasy she thought I had. It worked. It turned me on. And it enraged me. I pushed her back against the wall, running my fingers across her cheek. She wasn't pretty, but she wasn't horrid either. Not like some of them. She seemed like the kind of girl who, with a little effort, might have had a shot at making something of herself. "Do you mind if I hit you?" She shook her head. Just don't leave a mark. I flashed a knowing smile and then lightly tapped her cheek. Rule number one, a little buy-in in the beginning can save you a whole lot of trouble in the end. Can I ask you another question? A slight nod. How many continents are there? She laughed nervously. Is this a trick question? Maybe. Good thing you're not paying me to answer questions, she said, leaning in. Pumping into her rhythmically, at first fast and then slow, I cupped my hand over her mouth. Against her filthy ear, I whispered, "Don't scream." She was an easy listener. Her eyes kept searching. Even in the salty glow of the dim street lamp, I could see that they were blue with green flecks. The kind you could easily forget if you let yourself. I kept moving, eventually timing myself with the rhythm of her pulse. When I wrapped my hands around her throat, she didn't protest. Women always put up with things way longer than they should. Maybe there's a school where they take little girls aside and teach them this, I don't know. Maybe it's the fairy tales. Whatever the case, my hands squeezing her neck, closing her airway. I'm sure she thought, this is what he's into. This is his thing. This is it. This is the money shot. And it was, in a different sort of way. I didn't let up, not even when she started to panic and I was forced to slam her head against the brick wall. To her credit, she didn't stop fighting, not even then. I had 80 pounds on her, easy, and a whole lot more experience. The more she fought, the harder I pressed. I squeezed and I squeezed until we both found our release. Her eyes fixed in place and blood trickled from her nose. Her breathing slowed, before it ceased altogether. Finally, her struggle had come to an end. It was beautiful, being that for her. The answer is 7, I told her afterward. For what it's worth, I let her keep the money. Not that she'll be needing it, but because it was the right thing to do. Chapter 3. The day everything changes doesn't begin particularly different than any other day. My eyes flutter open at 7 o'clock a.m., knowing that Joni, our housekeeper, will have left a tray with a cup of coffee that will have turned cold, along with 2 dry pieces of toast, on my desk. After I take care of business and wash up, I will shuffle down the hall to my office, 23 steps away, where I will plop myself in the chair and remain hunched over my keyboard until 12:30, when I am well and hungry again. At that time, I will take my lunch in my wife's room, next to her hospital bed, where I'll read to her what I've sweated out all morning. She'll nod, and maybe, if I'm lucky and it's a good day, I'll even earn a smile. A smile might keep me going into the evening hours. A smile propels the story forward. They're harder to come by than they used to be, which is saying a lot. That's not to say that it's ever been easy. Eve may have folded into herself, but some things remain the same. What lit her up 34 years ago are still the things that light her up today. These days, about an hour of me is all she can handle before her eyelids become heavy, her breathing deepens, and I hear the familiar sounds of her slumber. I try not to take it personally. She sleeps most of the time. The doctors say it's to be expected, and I suppose it's probably for the best. I'm sorry, darling. Our eyes meet, and for a moment she looks terrified. I wasn't able to fill your prescription yesterday, but you'll never believe. I start to tell her about the body, to describe the crime scene the way I would have done in the past, before I catch myself. It's hard to know what will set her off, and I can't afford another episode like the last. Not today. Once she's drifted off, the routine continues. I head downstairs and shuffle through the pile of mail before returning to my office to drum away some more on my work in progress. Routine is both a blessing and a curse to any writer. You need it. Too much of it, though, and the outcome is dire. Your work and your life become stunted, blurred together. Assumingly, this is how I become acquainted with the bottle. Not that I'll call myself an alcoholic, but that doesn't stop other people from doing it. From my agent to my editor to the garbage man, everyone has their opinions. They may make alcohol the enemy, but liquor is my friend. A few drinks in, my troubles are forgotten, and everything good is magnified. But that's not why I drink. It allows me to sleep, something I haven't done much of lately. Not since things got worse. The doorbell chimes, an alarming reminder that today is the day. Today, the routine changes. Joni greets our guest in her normal, cheerful way, even though I've specifically asked her not to be overly friendly. Not to this visitor. Like any stray cat, if you feed them, they tend to stick around. While I wait for Joni to show him in, I scan my inbox. 32 new emails from fans await a response, plus 2 from my agent, and 1 from my editor. I comb through several emails from fans, most of which want to know when the book is coming. But the others, I leave for later. Or maybe never. It's a pressure cooker, my inbox. People are angry. I left them with a cliffhanger, and then I ended the series in what was apparently exactly the opposite way readers wanted it to go. Most people, it seems, are unaware that life doesn't always go the way you want it to. Carefully, I ingest the latest email from my editor. The last one was a doozy. Sure, maybe I messed up by having one too many before taking on my fan mail. Maybe I was harsh. Maybe I did act with a certain ferocity, but I still don't think his threats were warranted. More than 30 years of my life I've given to padding their pockets. Between a rock and a hard place, they said they were, as though threatening legal action was supposed to soften things. Given nothing is private anymore, believe me, I didn't come out unscathed. Some of the gems I wrote managed to make it into social media, numerous blogs. But the worst of it, well, it made national news. George Dawson losing it? I'm not saying my publisher's frustration is unjustified. It was a mess to clean up, if cleaning up such a thing is possible. I write for a living, so I know better than anyone that words matter. But as I reminded my agent, bad press is better than no press. Back then I assumed it would all blow over. Except it didn't. Sales dropped way down. They stayed that way. It doesn't help that I haven't released a new book in 3 years. Career suicide in this market, with attention spans being what they are, and consumer loyalty being practically non-existent. It's no wonder why my publisher is ready to drop me. Problem is, they want to drop me and sue me. In a last-ditch effort to avoid the courtroom, an agreement was reached, culminating in appearance of the man at my front door. The manuscript that was due 7 months ago? Well, they want it yesterday. My editors have assured me the man standing in my doorway, staring back at me with intense brown eyes, a sly smile, and large hands, is more than capable of managing this project. This man can apparently solve all of our problems. He'd better. To say that I can't afford to take on my publisher in a court of law would be a massive understatement. A pleasure to meet you, Mr. Dawson. I'm a big fan. Huge! Wonderful. Although his handshake is genuine and his smile friendly, I don't buy it. Sincerity is a virtue few in this business possess. Still, what a surprise it would be to have them send me someone who was not only an amateur, but also not full of shit. I know the circumstances are difficult, but I can assure you, these aren't circumstances, kid. This is business. Of course. He stares at the floor for a moment before nodding at a chair. Eaves. May I? With a flick of my wrist, I point to the couch. You can sit there. We sit silently for the better part of an hour. Him staring at his dreadful mobile device, me glancing over my notes. Twice he tries to engage me in conversation, I assume about why he's come, and twice I clear my throat and wave him off. Finally, dusk sweeps over the horizon outside my window, and I realize it's time for dinner. Eve is very punctual, and I don't want to keep her waiting. I stand in motion toward the door. That's all for today.
It's okay, he replies without looking up. I don't have anywhere I need to be.
Pity. He seems surprised by my response, even more so when I usher him out.
I could read over your notes.
It's supper time.
I don't mind.
He follows me down the hall, his footsteps falling in time with mine, too close for my liking.
I do. Look, I know this isn't what you wanted, me being here.
I turn on my heel and we come eye to eye. Well, almost. My shoulders hunch a little more than I'd like these days. That's the first accurate thing you've said.
But, he cocks his head, I'm being paid to do a job, and frankly, I could use the money.
We could all use the money. That's why you're here.
Yes, but it would be very helpful if, well, you know, if we could get things sorted rather quickly.
It's a novel. They don't just get sorted.
No, he says. No, I suppose they don't, do they?
He looks at me as though he's expecting something profound. When nothing comes, he fills the silence.
That's why I'm here. To help you finish the book, and, you see, I really need it to happen sooner rather than later.
This seems important to you, I say. Not because I really care, but because it's important to find out what a person's motivations are. The sooner the better.
It is.
Why's that? Why not just write your own book?
It's complicated.
Chapter 4
He waves once and then he is gone, disappearing as easily and effortlessly as he appeared. I watch his taillights fade and I wonder, is he as glad to go as I am to see him leave? For young men his age, it must be a relief to go back to his bustling life in the city. But if that's the case, then why was he so reluctant to go? Standing in the driveway, the dust settles as the sound of his car fades further in the distance. I take a minute to survey the grounds, to refocus, to breathe in the evening air. Our first encounter went better than I thought, and yet I could see it in his eyes. He is going to be a challenge. For one, he is of the impression that he wants this. This being what, exactly, I am not sure. The estate? The acclaim? The years of blood, sweat, and on many occasions, tears? No, I doubt any of that is what he is after. Just the success. The stifling, suffocating success. If I were a betting man, and trust me, I am, anyone who has been in this business as long as I have is no stranger to risk. I'd be willing to bet that he'll have it. He has that certain something. Something you don't find all that often. There's a quiet hunger about him. A gentle curiosity. The kind that isn't quick and flaming. The kind that won't easily burn out. He has staying power, this Liam character, which is what keeps me in the garden long after the sun has set and a steady chill has filled the air. His presence worries me. I am in the position to be dependent on him. Which is the worst kind of position to be in. It's not a good look for me. In fact, he worries me enough to know that change is in order. There's something about having a visitor, after all this time, something about this particular visitor, that reminds me I'd better call the lawn guy. He hasn't come in nearly a month, maybe two. If I had to guess, I'd say his absence has something to do with his invoices going unpaid. A problem I have the power to fix. I am lazy, but not yet completely broke. While I'm at it, I should probably look into getting a painter out. But before that, a roofer to take a look at the leak. A plumber to fix the guest bath couldn't hurt either. This house, like all things, is beginning to show its age. With its steeply pitched gable roof, Elaborate
sample complete. Ready to continue?